You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's time to talk all things football in Down the Line. We will be reviewing the weekend's Premier League action, and there was plenty. Joining us from the Down the Line gang are Andrew, Ryan, and also new on the Down the Line is Stephen. Let's start with Friday night football, shall we? And Crystal Palace 1, Manchester City 4. Ryan, Manchester City put 4 goals past Palace there at Selhurst, then it was quite a good performance. Was it a statement of intent from Manchester City in order, you know, trying to show that they can challenge for the title with Arsenal? Or did Palace just give them far too much space inside the box?
Oh, to be honest, I think Ryan Cherki being given a bit more limelight with different players moving around, I think this is a good season for him to have a chance to show what he can actually do. He's obviously a mercurial talent, but I think with the space in the squad, he's looking good. But as for Palace, they just don't look with it. I just think Palace are looking a bit shaky at the moment.
You've mentioned Ryan Cherki, and Andrew, I want to come to you on this one. I mean, I wasn't sure about him at first, but this season so far, he bagged a brace this, you know, against Palace. He provided 2 assists, I believe, against Bournemouth. He's looking quite incredible.
Yeah, he does seem to be rejuvenated this season. I suppose it just depends. I think they'll have tougher tests. It's of interest to see how he gets on against in the bigger matches. But like Ryan said, I'm sure he's probably enjoying the fact that he's got a bit more of a free role now. And can show his talent.
Stephen, I don't know what your thoughts on Crystal Palace are. 2 games so far, lost both of them. They are gaining some players, but they're also, you know, rumoured to lose more decent players, with Mateta possibly going and Forrest taking Munoz as well. What are your thoughts on Palace this season? They're heading for a tough one, I think.
I think it'll be tough if Mateta goes. Also, I think they had a couple of defenders out for they're injured for the City game, but also with Europe as well, their squad, maybe it's going to be similar to last season where they were struggling, and it seemed that a lot of their players were burnt out because they played quite a few games with, obviously, league and Europe being like Thursday, Sunday and those sort of things. So that's maybe what caught up with them last season. But I think they maybe need to get a few more players in, not sure who they're wanting to get in. I know Liverpool made a bit of a start that they rejected as well, so be quite interesting.
Moving on to Liverpool taking on Nottingham Forest, it finished a tight 2-2 draw, we'll say. Stephen, we'll stick with you on this, with Liverpool dropping points. Was this down to Liverpool's defensive lapses, do you think? Or, you know, do Forest actually deserve credit for the way they played at Anfield?
Forest were good going forward. I think Liverpool are still in transition from last season, from Slot to the way Iriola wants to play. And I think obviously they're learning the ways. I think one of the thing turning points was that Liverpool wanted to get subs on and the board wasn't working. And that's where, because that then led to Forest's second goal from the quick throw-in. I think if he were able to get subs on, that may not have happened. But Forest certainly looked good, but weren't bad in patches. Munoz was good for Liverpool, and it was good, well taken goal by Isak.
Now I want to talk about Munoz. He rescued a point late on, Ryan. How concerned are you about Liverpool's structure when it comes to defending transitions?
At the moment, I would say one of the biggest transitional problems we have is our midfield. We just need somebody to actually defend, and a bit more gritty defending. We're a bit soft at times. The midfield just seems to melt quite easily. And because of this, we seem to be very susceptible on the counter-attack, which Newcastle showed very well the week before. And this time, yeah, again, we just seem to be... The whole midfield transition needs to be worked on by Iriola. And then we need to see, obviously, I don't think we've got any more any more players coming in now. And yeah, I just think the midfield is an area that we really need to work on and get our transitions correct.
I want to talk Coventry Hull City here. So a friend of mine who supports Manchester United, after their loss to Hull City, said to me, we let them win because that's the only game Hull City will win this season. I then had to message him following Coventry losing to Hull City 1-0, kind of going, about what you said. Andy, when it comes to Hull City, they backed up their opening win with a 1-0 away victory at Coventry. Are they turning into early top half disruptors, sort of kind of the Sunderland of last season, or did Coventry just simply lack ideas in the final third?
I think they'll have a drop off at some point. I know they've got Villa at the weekend, which they could get some more good fortune there. But I think sometimes teams like Hull, play well, against the odds. And I think the way that they played at Coventry probably suited them, where it was against the run of play, and they just sort of took their chance. I think the trouble with Coventry, having seen Ipswich do the same thing 2 years ago, is you lose games, you lose at Arsenal and you say, right, that's fine, but we'll beat Hull. And then you look at the games moving forward and you think, well, that's okay. If we win that game, then we've got one win on the board. And then you don't win those games, then you're suddenly two losses, no goals scored. I think they've got City away at the weekend, then Brighton at home. So then you're looking, potentially before the international break, they haven't got a point. And then you're, head going down. So it is tough. And I think the way Hull have started will do them a favour, because at least the morale will be up and they'll feel like they can, at least progress up the league. But I think Coventry, I'd worry a bit if, they need to get a result on the board soon, and I don't see it coming in the next couple of weeks.
Stephen, talking of Coventry, two games lost on the bounce. I mean, the whole City one, you could say, was a bit of a surprise. Losing to Arsenal at the beginning of the season, you could kind of expect it. But is it time to panic about their adaptation to the top flight, especially with the games Andy mentioned? They've got a few tough fixtures coming up where you kind of don't see them getting points. How do you think Coventry will do? What are your thoughts?
I think Coventry will struggle because the gap from the Championship to the Premier League is massive, and I think they're going to be probably bottom three. I think they'll actually go back down this season because as I say, the gap's massive, and to adapt to the actual pace and the actual speed of the Premier League compared to it. And like Andy was saying there, that obviously it wouldn't matter about the Arsenal game because they'd have written that off, but they'd have been targeting maybe to get points against Hull. But Hull looked good when I saw them against Man United on the television for the first game. So they've obviously got a bounce at the moment, and they'll take that forward. But obviously Coventry have obviously planned which games they'll be looking to get points. So they'll be disappointed not to have got any points against Hull at the weekend.
Ryan, one thing I found interesting is the Hull City manager talking about how, despite the great performances, two of Hull's starting 11 players were, being linked with moves away. And the impression I kind of got was that the manager was quite unhappy. Understandably, you may say, for... they don't have many players as it is. Linking some of their star players with moves away still, I don't know how many of them will go through. Obviously, we're still yet to find out. What are your thoughts on that?
Personally, the reason I've been championing Hull to stay up all this time is because of the manager. Jurkiewicz he's really very clever and knows how to set up a team. So even if they lose some big players, to be honest, Ollie McBurney seems to be doing brilliant for them, and he's connecting play, and he looks like he's got all the experience that he's got. He's really showing why Scotland should have picked him in the summer. With his knowledge and his way of setting up and what he's good at, I think Hull will survive even if they lose a couple of players.
Let's move on to London and the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It finished at Tottenham 0, Newcastle 2. Certainly a tricky one. At one point, I thought Tottenham would be heading for the first 0-0 between them and Newcastle since 1971 in 84 league meetings since, it was a great stat, which I didn't actually... I found it quite surprising, really. What I found surprising is that the Tottenham loss, Stephen. Newcastle came to Tottenham, sweeped them aside pretty much with a 2-0 win. Are Newcastle asserting themselves as, dare I say, top four contenders after all of us were quite concerned about it?
They certainly started quite well, haven't they? I mean, especially against Liverpool, they were good. And then at Tottenham, they played really well in parts and got their two goals. And say the signings the signings they've made. Although they've lost quite a few players, they've got some players in, and I think with the new manager, they've got a bounce there. But as I say, they certainly look good against Liverpool and made Tottenham look quite second best in that game at the weekend.
Ryan, Tottenham have clearly struggled to make opportunities over the last two games. What needs to change in their setup, do you think? You know, before game week three, or just in general, before the season really, really goes badly for them?
Well, I'm going to vilify Tonali because he's had a full pre-season, so he's had plenty of chance to train, to learn the systems and everything else, and he just doesn't look fit. And there's certain members of the Tottenham team that are already being called out by De Zerbi, which is an interesting way to start. So they just need to get organised and fit. But obviously, with a lot of changes, they're not quite gelling yet. So they did show some signs of doing all right. They just didn't take the chances. I'm not concerned about Tottenham just yet. But when things don't go well for De Zerbi, he does get upset very quickly. So I just think they really need to gel, or it could just be a massive disaster. As for Newcastle, I'm going to have to eat my words because I was one of the people that predicted they would do badly. They're doing what they're doing is very quite simple in using the speed on the wings and using Alanga to the best effect.
Well, this is the thing, Andrew. I mean, Alanga has, you know, I've watched him over the last two games, and he's actually delivering what he didn't deliver last season when they bought him, and I think people were expecting that. So there's a lot of players in the Newcastle team that are performing quite well, despite everyone's thoughts, you know, and they did beat Tottenham with De Zerbi. I mean, he's an interesting manager in general. You never know what you're going to get with him. What are your thoughts on the game?
I think Tottenham look just like a team that's been cobbled together, all individually, but sound players. But there's just something in the last few years, something's just not working with what they're doing. And I think they, no matter who they buy, I just can't see how it's all going to work miraculously. You know, they're not just going to suddenly start pulling results out of thin air, and I think that would be the worry if I was a Tottenham fan, is to, you know, exactly what the plan is, because it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. But with Newcastle, they, you know, everyone was sceptical about the new manager when Eddie Howe left, but perhaps he's, you know, they obviously have background on who he is and what kind of manager he is, and with people like Alanga, perhaps he's, you know, put an arm around him and sort of, you know, given him a bit of a boost, same as Wissa and a few others. And, you know, he's got them all playing, you know, sort of nicer football as a group, because you never know what goes on behind the scenes. Perhaps Eddie Howe, you know, just wasn't doing that, and he was sort of ran out of ideas maybe, and this has sort of rejuvenated them.
Moving on to Sunday's games, Chelsea 4, Brighton 3. Ryan, it was a chaotic game as usual with Chelsea at the moment. Their attacking quality is great. You know, it's good that they can outscore most teams, but is it good enough to mark some, to me, very obvious defensive concerns despite now getting Emi Martinez in goal?
Well, they're trying to play three at the back, which is obviously changing back to what Chelsea did to what they did to previously win the league. So it's still a defensive change. To me, Chelsea have become the street fighter entertainers of football at the moment. They've got a team with a lot of players with a lot of attitude, and they just seem to be, yeah, very exciting up front. But as defensively, they just really haven't got it together yet. But that could be the tactical change and everything else. They're certainly exciting with the football at the moment.
It's quite thrilling. Andrew Cole Palmer, once again, very instrumental in the game. Is Xavi Alonso already getting the best out of his heavy-spent Chelsea side, or do you think he still needs to work a bit more on, well, the defensive angle?
I think that will come. I think that'll gel. They've got some new players in there, haven't they? So I think they'll probably you know, get to grips with certainly the new goalkeeper after bringing in Martinez. With Cole Palmer, I think the fact that he, you know, he wasn't the World Cup probably, you know, gave him reasons to, you know, have second thoughts about the way he, perhaps his conduct off the field, or if there's any kind of background stuff that's going on that perhaps affected his play last year. But he certainly looks like he's a bit more with it this season, and playing with, you know, if him, Pedro and Rodgers can get going, that, you know, that the certainly attacking in from the from the wings, they they'll be a threat to most defences. I'm sure he'll have a good season.
Stephen, we're only 2 weeks into the season, but I think Brighton, okay, they lost, but they have played in the Conference League on Thursday and they had a convincing performance. And then they again, although lost, played fairly convincingly, I'd say, against Chelsea. How do you think they're coping so far with the intensity of football and the schedule that they are required to play?
They look good in bits at Chelsea. I mean, also, I think they had probably four or five of their main players out injured or not available. So was it Belieber? I mean, he's left and gone to Man United, and also Minté wasn't playing. But I mean, they were a little bit caught out for a couple of the goals, but when they got going forward, they caused Chelsea lots of problems, and also corners and set pieces. And I think they had a really good spell of about 10, 15 minutes where I think the game was about 3-2, and they had a real go. But then once Chelsea made it 4-2, I think that sort of killed them off. But they looked good going forward. And as I say, Chelsea again were a little bit suspect at the back. But as I say, it's early days for both teams. But as I say, with Chelsea, I think obviously is it Fernandes that might be going to Man City. So they're going to be looking for another midfielder, maybe to bolster the midfield.
Moving on to the half four game now, it was Manchester United versus Ipswich. Your Ipswich, Andrew. It finished Manchester United 5, Ipswich 2. With Ipswich, they did take an early lead at Old Trafford before United did score the 5 goals. But what positive can Ipswich take away from that game? And at which point would you say the game slipped away from them?
I think the first half, they looked like two very equal teams, which was encouraging, really. I'm pleased with the way that they all seem to be gelling well. I think probably looking back at they should have gone with a back three, playing two wing backs rather than a back four with O'Shea at right back. But they still, I mean, first off they were fine. Sherpin in goal looks, he was a bit of an unknown when we signed him. However, I think the fact that he's 6'9" is going to save them a few points this season. They've signed Ezequiel Palacios from Bayer Leverkusen. He's a World Cup winner with Argentina. So it's the sort of player that Ipswich would have never have signed, ever in my lifetime. As well as, I think, a couple more today. So I think they've definitely got something going for them. But the second half against United, it was, well, the equaliser from Fernandes was born out of just slipped by Nunes, which, that can happen. It was tipping over rain. He just lost his footing, but that's, you pay the price in these Premier League games. You probably would have got a bit more luck last season in the Championship, whereas, he'd take your hand off for that chance. The second goal shouldn't have stood because it was a handball, and the silly rule that if Maguire had have scored or missed, then it would have been a handball. But it was because it went in off Jacob Greaves' heel. It was a goal, which I don't quite. As far as I'm concerned, as soon as it hits your hand, if it's a handball, the game stops, and it doesn't matter what happens after that. So that was a bit of an odd one. The third goal was a penalty, which, I think sometimes with games like that, when you're playing away at these big stadiums, the pressure gets on top of them, and they just, perhaps Jacob Greaves again, just sort of made a rash challenge. And then, as soon as the crowd's back on, because the crowd in the first half was pretty quiet, and then they got on top in the second half and just sort of ran away with it in the end. But I do think there are positives, and I think Ipswich's form at home is going to be key. I mean, like we were saying about Coventry earlier, I don't think winning at Old Trafford isn't really going to be on their script for this year, but any kind of positive results away is good. But then the next two away games are at Palace and at Everton. So, I think I'm not expecting much out of the Liverpool game on Friday, but I think that they will pick up points. And judging by the way some other teams have started the season, I'm fairly confident that they'll get enough to stay up.
Speeding us across to the final game, Monday Night Football, Arsenal played at Aston Villa, finished Aston Villa 0, Arsenal 1. Ryan, were Villa just lacking a bit of a sharp edge up front still?
Well, Villa did have a few chances that were quite good, and whether Tillemans' one would have stood, the one that hit the bar, because some say he made a foul first. But I thought Aston Villa actually showed a lot more than I was expecting. They were a lot more gritty than I was expecting. But Saka really did grab the ball by the horns. I feel like after having a very indifferent season last season, he's really trying to, he's got the determination to try and make the season more important for him. Obviously, they won the league and they did well in the Champions League, but I feel like he was one of the more disappointing Arsenal players last season. And I think he knows that. And I think he's really showing a lot of fight to prove that he is what everybody thought he was when a couple of seasons ago.
Stephen, I want to come to you and talk about the pressure I think that Unai Emery's facing. You know, Aston Villa have suffered back-to-back defeats this season so far. How much pressure is Unai Emery under to try and steady the ship?
It's maybe pressure from outside, but I think inside, whether they're obviously a lot of players have come in and gone out, so he's getting them all bedded in. But I think maybe within Villa, there's a plan of what they're trying to do, and that's why a lot of players have gone out. But it will certainly be interesting to see. But I think if they have another few more games where they don't get any points, there could be pressure on him. But then if you remember last season, they didn't get many points at the start of the season. And was it the first five or six games? And then they started to get it together. So maybe it might be similar for that. But when you think they've obviously replaced Martin as the goalkeeper, and quite a few of their best players have gone. I mean, they've still got John McGinn. But it's just obviously a rebuild season for them. But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Andrew, there are some new players with Villa. You know, they've lost a lot of good players, but they've bought some decent ones. And I thought Nicholas Jackson, okay, he didn't score, but he didn't look too bad. And I thought the new Villa keeper looked not too bad, to be fair. He can ping a ball or two. What are you thinking of this new lookish Villa? Will they be able to manage Premier League and European football commitments?
I think so. It all depends on Nicholas Jackson. You know, he's gone for a lot of money in his career, and I would question, if I was a Villa fan, why Bayern Munich or Chelsea didn't want to keep him, because he's not really proven much wherever he's been, and that's a bit of a question mark for me. But I think signing people like Goretzka, and they're going to sign Harwood Bellis, aren't they, from Southampton? I think they've got some good young players in that team. I think they'll be fine. I think that they're always a decent outfit. I think they'll get themselves together. You know, they'll probably get a decent result at the weekend away at Hull, and then they'll move on. But I think it's just teams like Villa, you know, that that success always ends up biting you on the backside in the end, because all your best players leave, and then, you know, they have to rebuild, much like some of the Dutch teams. You know, you ever watch Ajax, Feyenoord, or PSV, whichever one of them wins the league, like last season, they sell all their players, and then they'll be third or fourth this season. And they just buy up all the young players from the other teams, build them up, and then sell them on. So it's just, you know, par for the course when you're not one of the big four, I guess.
There you go. Plenty of exciting action there, and I'm sure more to come across the season, which we will be here very much from down the line. But for now, thank you very much, Andrew, Ryan, and Stephen, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
For more interviews, features and shows, go to your favourite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.